StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io. Today, we're flipping the coin on leadership hiring. Did you know more than 50% of startup leadership hires fail within 18 months? That means founders are gambling with the company's future and often are losing. Today's guest, Dominic Roth, has concluded over 400 executive searches, but he's not your traditional headhunter. He's a diagnostic-based CEO selector using psychology insights and behavioral prediction, not just glossy resumes, to spot winners. In this episode, we will explore why startup leaders fail, even if they've scaled before, the personality patterns of high-performing CEOs, what to do before you hire your first VP or C-level exec, and how to avoid a 250,000 euro mistake. Hey guys, welcome to StartupRate.io. Today, I'd like to welcome Dominic Roth. He's one of Europe's top executive search professionals with 400 plus leadership placements across VC, PE-backed companies. He specializes in diagnostic hiring, predictive behavior, and fit beyond the CV. He's also host of the number one DACH leadership podcast, CEO Career Code. I think we'll link it down here in the show notes. Dominic, welcome.
Thanks for having me here, Joe.
My pleasure. We're speaking about the founder's fork in the road. When a founder approaches you about hiring a VP, a vice president, or C-level executives, think about chief marketing officer, chief technology officer, leaders. What's the biggest red flag you listen for in the way they ask for help?
That's a good question, because it's not exactly a red flag, but more of an expectation that I need to question. In German, we have the saying, eierlegende Wollmilchsau.
It's something that can do everything. Like, it gives you wool, it gives you milk, it gives you meat.
That's right. And in the context of hiring, it describes a candidate who is required to have competencies in various and often unrelated fields, such as finance and also deep knowledge in technology at the same time, as an example. Yeah. And this is the one challenge. The other one is that founders often overestimate the ability to choose the right executives for the companies, while underestimating the failure rate of executive hires in the startup environment by data. Because the data we have on the cost of failed hires is quite alarming, as you said also in the intro, but I guess we will deep dive into that later. And if we talk about they overestimate, it's that they often hire for their family and friends. And that comes along with a lot of biases in the selection of executives.
Mm-hmm. I see. So, what eierlegende Wollmilchsau can be translated, I just looked it up, is something like a jack of all trades, a Swiss army knife, or one size fits all solution. That's what you've been referring to.
Yes.
You've said 50% of external startup leadership hires fail. Can you share cases where on paper everything looked right, but diagnostics told you a different story?
Of course I can, but what I would like to introduce you first is a study, because it doesn't come from myself. It's like not a claim that I say that's realistic. It's a study conducted by Kiefer, Martin and Hunt from 2020, and it says that in approximately 50% of cases, an executive turns out to be a misfit within the new company within 18 months. This is quite important. The results are based on a representative sample of 20,000 hiring processes, and these hiring processes even involved headhunters. And that is the point. Headhunters have not been able to reduce this 50% failure rate through the conventional methods, I would name it. So in fact, you could flip a coin and have the same result and save money by it, right? It's like in my cases, I often have technology companies that approaching me in order to select executives, and sometimes the fit in the CV and the interviewing part is so well done and well perceived by the decision makers, also VCs and PEs, that they would like to hire this person because of that. And then later we find out that maybe this person comes from another environment, more politics, has not the right capabilities in personality traits to perform. I have a lot of stories about that. I cannot name a company, of course, because I'm quite confidential, but we can come to that a little bit later. Yeah.
I'm just curious, what kind of diagnostics do you do here?
Yeah. There are a lot of tests out there, right? So we all know them, and it is not about the test. In a nutshell, how does valid diagnostics work? So it is the combinations of tests. So the combinations of statements from a personality questionnaire on the one hand, and the result of cognitive performance test on the other hand. And this only provides hypotheses they need to be further validated in an in-depth interview and should not be taken as a fact only if the person states, those personality traits on his or her self-perception. And this makes a difference. The test results are not final and must be further challenged through behavioral-based interviewing. And also we need to consider the situation and the cultural aspects of the company. And this procedure leads to accurate behavioral prediction, so to say. Yeah. So if you ask someone, how is your empathy level in a test? Can you imagine someone, Joe, who will state him or herself like, it's 2 or 3 out of 10. So that's the problem with those tests. Yeah.
It's basically only for people who don't want the job.
That's right. Yeah. But they need to, they tend to sell themselves, of course. And that's also okay, but it is our job to figure out what is the real behavior states. And it's not about personality and description. It's about behavioral aspects of the job and of the performing person.
Founders do have to convert from operator to evaluator because they say, I know what looks good. I just trust my gut, in German, Bauchgefühl. Why is this dangerous? Is this a dangerous mindset for hiring executives?
That's a good question. And maybe I forgot that to mention with your first question as an answer. Because after 400 executive searches and thousands of interviews, plus having studied psychology beforehand, I cannot even trust my gut feeling. So let's assume there's already a solid job profile where the company has a distinction between technical criteria and personality-related aspects upfront. So this is already existing, right? What I believe is that nobody would just conclude from gut feeling hiring a CTO without having done a deep dive in the technical competencies of this person. Yeah, but we are all experts, and that is quite superficial if it comes to the evaluation of the personality only by our gut feeling. So there we're quite superficial and we're quite confident, but if it comes to the technical requirements, we always need experts, we need cases, etc. This is the common case, but we should at least invest the same effort to get a deep understanding of the personality and behavior and not only in the technical expertise. And what I often see is that there are several HR questions referring to strengths and weaknesses, and the interpretation of the answers are based on several biases that come from like what we call shortcutting in psychology, stereotyping, or subjectivity. And that is what we mean if we talk about gut feelings. In fact, that are biases. And I say personally, I'm not immune against them, to be honest. I also need management diagnostics and methodology to take a good decision or to give a recommendation.
Founders, when did you first doubt your gut in a hiring decision? Drop your story in the comments or DM us, for example, on Threads. We're talking about here, Dominic, because this is very expensive. intensive. You've talked about the cost of a failed exec hire could be up to 28x their salary in a startup. What does that actually look like? Is there a story that shows the real world impact?
There are a lot of stories and studies about that. And of course, I'm not the one to examine this study or evaluate it. I just trust in studies that are there out there. And you know, you need to take into account different aspects in terms of costs. It's that we have internal, external costs. Yeah, you have like client retention costs often, or reputation. Yeah, and also in Germany, we should not forget it. It's severance pay. I think that's the term.
Severance pay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Severance pay. Right. Sorry for that. And of course, cost of recruiting, cost of onboarding the next employee. And if we talk about real costs, we also need to include opportunity costs. Yeah. And that is those costs that we need to take into account if there were someone who did the job right, like winning new clients, doing business development, especially in the startup environment, being hands-on. So what are the missed out opportunities by hiring the wrong person? And then it comes to a quite high number. And this is what studies said. What I would indicate for you as a startup founder is at least to have with a senior executive on VP level and or on C level, that is the real minimum. That's the other study I could found. It's 250 or 240, 250K euro for small caps, yeah, for a mishire. So that's the real minimum we can state here.
I see. What is a common personality trait in startup founders that like clashes with traditional corporate style execs, and how do you screen for it in advance?
I think looking at backgrounds alone is not sufficient in this case. I often see also VCs conclude that candidates from a large cap won't perform well in a startup environment. While there is some correlation, we shouldn't exclude these candidates too early in the process of the recruitment. A candidate's personality might enable them, the candidate, to adopt to a startup setting, and the desire for change could come from a motivation to break free from the constraints of established structures and processes in a large cap, right? So I guess by traditional style, you mean that we are talking about the manager of a large cap company who has the ability to delegate whilst in a startup. They must do everything themselves, right? That's maybe what you mean by that question. And also the behavioral and the what we call in diagnostics feeling of power. Yeah. So you would like to be perceived as the boss of the pack, so to say. Yeah. And this traditional motivator is definitely a red flag. We have to figure it out, but we need to do it in the interview phase and in the assessment and not upfront if we read a CV. Yeah, because we have a narrow niche to recruit in. Not everyone is motivated to join a startup. But if someone is motivated to join a startup coming from a mid-cap or even large cap from a business unit manager position, for example, then we have to select, is someone really willing to invest? Is someone really willing to invest in autonomy? And is this person changing because of a lack of autonomy? And this is a motivator and a selection criteria at the same time. So we need to hire for expertise. So we cannot exclude bigger cases, bigger large caps. But we also see, is this person motivated enough for the startup environment?
When I was thinking about the questions, I thought about something like the emotional hangover. Founders often don't realize how much their emotional energy goes into managing a mishire. What patterns do you see in founder burnout linked to leadership mismatch?
Okay. I believe there are multiple reasons for founder burnout. So it's not a funny story. It's always multifactorial. I think that's the English expression, what we psychologists say. So however, the intense engagement with a mishire is certainly energy consuming. Often VCs tell me that a founder holds on to a non-performing colleague, and this is the most common pattern I observe. It is better to hire slow carefully and to fire fast, to be honest. That is the best way. And also the main problem is, and that is also linked to the feeling, we should not invest too much feeling in like this family and friends setup. It's a company, and the VCs and the investors are expecting something from the founders, yeah, to be a manager and not to be the father of the family.
We'll be back after a short ad break. Stay tuned to learn about the first VP dilemma and resume versus readiness and much more. Hey guys, welcome back to our interview with Dominic, a headhunter who had made more than 400 placements of executives. And we talked about how to get external executives into startups and common mistakes. Let's call this the first VP dilemma, meaning the first vice president. For startups hiring their like first ever external vice president of sales, marketing, or operations or something, what's the single most overlooked mistake you see in the briefing or screening phase?
Mm-hmm. And it's a very good question. In the first phase, in the briefing, so to say, there is a wish list of expertise criteria and also personality traits like soft skills. And this is the Eierling Wollmilchsau referring to the beginning of our talk. Yeah, so this is a wish list. The first step for me is then to challenge the startup's job profile and differ between what is a mandatory criteria and what is nice to have. And what can be also then compensated by team members? So let's hire for potential and not too much for expertise in every field of the competence profile, as it becomes quite expensive. So what can be covered by personality and potential, and what is really a must-have criteria? So that is the first step. Yeah. And in the screening of like sales candidates, let's take this as an example, because it's the second role that I'm recruiting, at least in startups, is always head of business development or CSO. Yeah. The founders often overvalue the network aspect. So candidates overestimate their network themselves. And in addition, candidates are not able to reactivate the network for other products in most of the cases. So example is, if I am hiring a headhunter for my team, network is quite crucial, Joe. That is maybe what we rely on. And I think it's also in technical companies the same story. But my belief is, one-third rule, so to say. One-third of the customers remain with the old company, one-third follow the consultant, and one-third turn away from both the company and the consultant. And that is a realistic estimation of network. So we should not focus too much on it, but more on potential and capabilities. And the second problem, especially with VPs or the first CSO, is that we tend to favor candidates with a high level of, let's name it, extroversion and strong communication skills during the interviews. We assume that this candidate will also succeed in acquiring new customers because of the way he or she communicates. However, this is a bias. We should not infer sales competence from an observed presence in the meeting. It requires much more, such as resilience, such as influence, which must be evaluated separately in the process and later in the process. We cannot generalize from one trait to another. At the end of the day, the person might just be extrovert and charismatic maybe, but not have the ability to deliver results. So these are the most common observations I have.
Mm-hmm. I see. We've been talking about this, and your edge is empirical. You apply management diagnostics to assess behavior and fit. Can you walk us through a specific test or signal you use that startups wouldn't typically consider?
Most VCs nowadays at least consider personality tests. But that is the problem. It's just a test, like the inside personality test that ranks personalities in colors. Maybe you know that. Yeah. And it's an interesting indication, but it's not valid enough to predict behavior. And the tests are not aligned to the specific situations, culture, and challenges of the vacancies. And the results are overall statements about personality. So this is a frame, what you shouldn't do. So the first problem is that they are mostly descriptions of traits, self-descriptions, which doesn't need to help us forward. And the second problem is that, it's not aligned to the context of the role, these self-descriptions. So if you're looking for a good test, it's not a test, it's a whole assessment that you should have cognitive abilities, you should have personality traits, and then test this in an in-depth interview with an expert. So that would be the best setup for a startup.
Talked about the best setup for startup here. I was wondering for our audience, what's one interview question you've used to uncover leadership behavior? Share it on LinkedIn and tag startuprate.io. Curious question, what the data didn't say. Can you share a time when the CV and diagnostics aligned, but still the hire didn't work out? What did you miss? And what did you learn?
I also had failures, especially in the beginning of my career. I underestimated the stakeholders in my first year, for example, or first years. I just listened to the PE or the VC owner and his or her expectations from the future position holder in the portfolio company. But I did not interview the management team in order to get a holistic view of the situation, challenges, and also of the DNA of the company. That is something I learned. So it is just one view. I need to really deep dive and understand what is the challenge, what is the situation, and the DNA in order to derive from that a competence profile and then do assessments and the whole executive search process. That was the main failure I made, I would say.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the executive search process. Founders do already have like guesstimate about how long it takes to hire somebody like an employee, like a team lead. How long should founders actually estimate between the first email to you and the first working day of their new VP or executive?
Very good question. Let's try to find an appropriate answer. It is the first step is our executive search process, which I won't deep dive here, but it's about 10 weeks that we need to have someone sign a contract with the company. And then, of course, you have notice periods to be taken into account. So I would indicate for notice period at least 3 months to be very conservative in the estimations. We have 8 weeks plus 3 months, I would say. 8 to 10 weeks plus 3 months. Yeah.
That's also something I would have in mind. If you say like 10 weeks, there's always somebody traveling, somebody on vacation, and make it 3 months at least. I do believe if you're talking like a chief technology officer, for example, right now with AI skills, or somebody who'll take over as a CEO, I would say you can more than double it.
Sorry.
The time you need, if you're looking for VP, something like 3 month guesstimate. But if you're looking for somebody like an external CTO, with crucial, for example, AI skill, exactly, or even CEOs, how long do you think you should take there? Maybe up to a year?
I would say the process is quite the same. with this CEO or a CTO with a VP. It's just like the availability. We are relying on the availability, depends on the what month we are heading to, like summer, etc. But the notice period is the crucial point. And you know, there are often like notice periods written down for 1 year, but it's not that the candidate will stick to that written down agreement. You can also talk to your employer and say, okay, I have a new opportunity. You will also save costs. Yeah. Let's find an agreement. Like I can get out here after 6 months. So we should manage to have someone, in a shorter period, not 1 year, because in 1 year, a startup environment is based on dynamics and pace. You can't wait 1 year for a CEO. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. That's always an issue. You've done more than 400 searches. I'm sure you recognize some patterns. 400s of VC and PE backed firms. What personality patterns or behaviors have you consistently seen in the top performing startup leaders?
The first is simple and related to what I just said, the pace and the dynamics of the VC and PE universe. It is the ability to take a very fast decision without having sufficient data. You can quickly adapt after having taken the wrong decision in this environment, but you cannot miss out chances and opportunities and slow down the scaling by overthinking. That is relevant for both mid-caps and also startups. That is one personality pattern for very good performing leaders to take fast decisions. And the second, I would say, if I have to name it, is the ability not to be a team player at every certain stages of scaling. What I mean is that often the founder is the protector of a harmonious environment in a startup when it scales up. So co-founders have a common vision, of course, and also perceive their startup as a family and friends setup. But the investors don't invest in family, they invest in business and the CEO. So it is not the CEO's job to provide a harmonious environment, but also to take sometimes unpopular decisions in order to save the company's health. So taking fast decision and unpopular decisions, I think I don't like that idea, to be honest, but it's the truth.
Talking now a little bit about future you, if your future self looked back at this conversation 10 years from now, what would they say about your mission to change how leadership hiring works in startups?
I would say it is awareness of the common mistakes in hiring executives, and maybe a formula how it can work out and in order to ensure performance of the company. I still believe in our DACH region, innovation and discipline, and that we have an impact on the world's economy. So that is real my focus. And if I have a footprint, small or big, in this direction, I would be more than happy.
Mm-hmm. Dominik, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you as guest here. Hope to have you back soon.
Thank you.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.